Hi, welcome to Blogging Heads TV. This is Culturally Determined, and I'm your host, Aria Cohen-Wade. And my guest today is Matt Binder. Matt, could you introduce yourself?
Sure, Aria. Thanks for having me on Blogging Heads today. My name is Matt Binder. I am a producer and contributor for The Majority Report with Sam Seder. We're a political, online, radio, and video web show at majority.fm. And I also write articles, and I also run a few blogs, and one in probably well-known public shaming, the Tumblr blog. Yeah, that's me.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on. And the main reason I wanted to talk to you today is you wrote an interesting article that was on Salon, and the headline is "The New Gamergate: Angry White Men Are Trying to Shut Down Diverse Comics." And so, why don't we start with just for viewers who don't know or don't exactly remember the details? Can you talk about what Gamergate is? I believe some people say it's actually about ethics and gaming journalism.
Yes, that's the Gamergate supporters and the ones who use that hashtag. That's there basically. That's what they hide behind. Gamergate started basically in August of last year when a independent developer named Zoe Quinn was her ex-boyfriend posted this long blog post online, basically accusing her of cheating on him and all these other personal details. And the general gist of it to the gaming community was that this indie game developer was getting favors basically from gaming writers or gaming journalists, as they call them, for positive coverage. And that's basically how this all came out. It first focused completely on her personal life. Even the hashtag was not Gamergate at that time. And the very first use of Gamergate was actually by Adam Baldwin, who you might know from Hollywood films like Independence Day and being a Breitbart writer. He basically tweeted out two videos attacking this woman for her sex life, and he hashtagged with those videos Gamergate. And that's basically how it started. Even though it later came out that there was absolutely no reviews by any of these people she was being harassed about having some sort of connection with, they never reviewed her game at all, and it's still going on.
Right. So, I mean, I think the thing that's very strange about this story is that the kind of the two sides in it can't even agree what it's actually about. So,
I
like,
mean,
so there's
the
this joke online that actually it's about ethics and gaming journalism, but it be also became this story about misogyny and how people, a lot of people who are playing games, felt like they were under attack, and then a lot of people lashed out in very misogynistic and threatening and rape threats and death threats and these kind of things, and events were canceled. And so it spiraled into this crazy thing, but like the two sides can't agree even on like what the terms of like what they're actually talking about.
Well, it's basically like, the two sides can't agree on if you look at on a broader scale, something that's not so niche. I mean, there's one side that has, 90, what is it, 97, 98% of scientists say climate change is happening and global warming is real. And then you have the other side who's claiming, oh no, scientists can't agree because there's that, what, they could find one guy who has some sort of scientific background who says, no, it's not man-made, it's not happening. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. There's the side that's dealing in with what's actually happening, and another side which is trying to claim differently when the facts just don't back that up.
Right, but I guess it would be in that analogy, it would be kind of like if the people who were saying that, climate change isn't real, if they were saying actually this whole climate change thing is about, like pancakes, like really this is all about
Yeah, that's
pancakes.
even, yeah, perfectly put. Yes. I mean, the thing is, this probably wouldn't have even gotten too mainstream. It probably would have stayed in the gaming community. Because let me tell you, sexism and misogyny in video games is nothing new. I mean, this is a long-running rampant issue within that community. But what happened was, Anita Sarkeesian, who is this video game critic, she's a feminist, she runs this web series called The Feminist Frequency. A few years ago, she basically crowdfunded to put together a video series that was basically looking at women in video games, how characters are portrayed, how storylines are written for women in games, the female characters. And basically what happened was there was a big uproar about this because people were just pissed that, you know, God forbid these things are pointed out. And it got a lot of mainstream coverage because of all the harassment she was receiving. She ended up getting her series funded, like, much more than she was looking for. And it just so happened that one of the videos that she puts together, one of them was released at the same time Gamergate was really getting going. So that's when, you know, it really took to mainstream, because then they started going after her with this same Gamergate sort of thing where, you know, we're under it. The gamers are under attack, and they were attacking her because she was just critiquing from a feminist perspective video games and the communities within video games. And this really ruffled their feathers, I guess you can say. But that's basically how it got so big. And then, you know, video game websites who cover the gaming industry, they basically saw what was happening. And then they wrote these articles about how the term gamer doesn't really mean what it used to mean. You know, with the rise of casual games, with the rise of, you know, the Nintendo DS being such a huge video game console because its ability to, you know, it's handheld, it's very open to many different players of many different backgrounds. And then, you know, with, you know, apps, you know, if you're an iPhone, your Android device, that's opening up a whole new world for a whole you know, new genre of games and gaming, which just brings more people into the mix. And the term gamer isn't as small. You know, when you say gamer, it doesn't necessarily, you know, used to say gamer and people would have this, you know, this mindset to go right into, oh, let me think of the stereotypical gamer and what they look like. And, you know, that's just not true anymore because of the rise of this sort of popular casual games. And, you know, when these sites wrote this, you know, to basically say that term gamer doesn't mean the same thing anymore, they said gamers are dead. And I mean, anyone who's ever read an article and has any sort of sense of reading comprehension knows exactly what they meant. But they looked at it, the Gamergate community looked at it as if someone was literally saying, I want you dead, you don't matter anymore. Like, it's like stunning to anyone who doesn't live in this bubble. And that's sort of why I think it got so big, because, you know, outside of this bubble, this looks insane.
Yeah. And there's all these kind of weird conspiratorial, like flow charts, or like, you know, this with like Microsoft Paint level, you know, this person linking to this, all this kind of crazy stuff. But I guess kind of like maybe the charitable reading of the people who were involved in Gamergate, or at least a possible charitable reading would be like, yeah, so they have this identity that they call themselves gamers, and they see this as, you know, an important part of who they are. Yeah. And then they feel like their subculture is being attacked, or people are trying to change the subculture for political purposes or something like that, which kind of feeds into what your article is about. So why don't we move to that?
Sure.
And you can talk about how there's kind of a new kind of this paradigm has kind of shifted to comic books.
Got it. Yes, of course. So when Gamergate was going on, I basically wrote this article because I realized a lot of, you know, right wingers, and I don't mean, you know, your regular, you know, TCOT Twitter conservative, you know, just someone who identifies as a conservative or Republican tweeting online. I mean, you know, the pundits, like the Breitbart writers and the people trying to get a name out there as, you know, an internet conservative talker, you know, with the rise of podcasts and online YouTube talk shows and such. And I noticed that so many of these right-wing reactionaries were coming together to sort of take advantage of what was going on. They saw this culture war happening, you know, because they see these gamers see themselves as under attack by feminists. And in a larger way, they see it as themselves being attacked by this, they use the term social justice warrior. Anyone, you know, who wants to see a diversity, you know, whether it be gaming or comic books or whatever. And so these right-wing writers, for example, Milo Yiannopoulos from Breitbart, and this other guy who was trying to make a name for himself to try to sell his unbelievable views. You have to see some of the things this guy said. Mike Cernovich, they jumped onto this bandwagon of attacking the feminists and the social justice warriors when they clearly didn't care about games. In fact, if you go back into their online history, you can find posts made by them that date before Gamergate happened, where they were basically calling this crowd nerds and losers and how they should grow up. And then all of a sudden they care about the gaming identity because they see, oh, look, there's these young impressionable minds. we could generate you know, article clicks, page views, YouTube hits out of saying, you know, the conservative viewpoint fits in with your ideology more than, you know, maybe you're young, maybe you thought, you know, you were a liberal, but you're not, because these social justice warriors and these feminists, they consider themselves to be liberals and progressives. Mm-hmm. And so they jumped in to do that. And it was just so obvious too, because they knew so little about the community. There was no background. I mean, some of these guys are older, but they didn't even know about, you know, that community when, you know, they were young. They just had no interest whatsoever in games past, present, or future. And suddenly, here they are. They're the voice of Gamergate.
Right. So you wrote a piece a couple months ago in which you kind of went back through their Twitter feeds of some of these people and found, you know, things they wrote that were, you know, made them seem like total hypocrites. And we'll link to that piece.
Yeah.
And so so the connection to comics is that there's been in the past year or so, a number of instances where there's been a change in a longstanding comic book character, like Thor is the one you talked about. So if people have seen, you know, there's been two Thor movies, and Thor's in the Avengers movie. If people have seen those and who don't read comics, you know, Thor is this one of the characters who was created in the early 60s, obviously based off of the Norse mythology character. And in this new iteration of Thor, Thor is a woman.
Yes. And God forbid Thor's a woman for these guys.
Odin forbid.
Yeah, Odin forbid. By Odin's beard, I think, is the exact... But you know, it's the same thing, like I was saying, with the video gaming. These right-wing reactionaries are coming over here. Because I will tell you this. While there is the same issue with sexism and misogyny in the comic book community like there is in the video game community, I personally don't see the vitriol to be that as bad. Because... Mm-hmm. Comic books have this long history where you know they didn't fix it, but you know there's definitely segments of the comic book community that are open to this and meant for this. You know, like I put in the piece, you can find comic books, mainstream comic books like Green Lantern, dating back to the 70s, where they're discussing social justice issues, they're discussing feminism, they're discussing race, and they're discussing it in a very progressive way. Mm-hmm. So there's this background here that just wasn't there before. Well, there wasn't there, I'm sorry, not before, in this other community, video games.
Right.
And because you know, it's been around for much longer. I'm not saying, you know, gaming can't get there. It just doesn't have that history to have gotten there yet. And so what we're basically seeing is, especially with this Thor character, they're attacking Thor. Again, Milo Yiannopoulos of Breitbart wrote this article for Breitbart that was just loaded with inaccuracies and false and just falsehoods, just wrong information. And being that it's published in Breitbart, they're able to use this I'm speaking of the right-wing reactionaries as well as those sexist and misogynistic comic book fans. And there's a lot of overlap with those gaming people too. Mm-hmm. And so they're using this to try to undermine the Thor comic. You know, look, the new Thor, who is a woman, is failing. And that's just not true. So in this piece, I went through how they were wrong about what they were saying about Thor and how they were wrong about the factual sales data. You know, things that you just can't refute. It's not opinion-based. And what you'll find is that they're horribly misinformed and wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah. So you point out that, you know, the Thor reboot has, you know, sold fairly well, and there's another comic, Mrs. Marvel, who's another longstanding character who they rebooted to be a Muslim American character. Who's also, that comic is also selling well. And you know, I'm kind of a lapsed comic book reader, and read a lot of comics when I was a teenager, but haven't in a while. And you know, like there's a longstanding history of this. You know, Giant Size X-Men number one, which was the comic that kind of rebooted X-Men. Yes. I think it was 74. So X-Men had been around for like 10 years, and it was five main characters, and they were all white. And then Giant Size X-Men rebooted with Storm, who was a character from Africa, and then also it was kind of like in the 70s, it was more like they had a Banshee, like an Irish character. Yes. That was kind of diversity for that era, but like, yes, they had a Russian character, and you know, so all the original X-Men were like kidnapped or something, and then they brought in these new characters, and pretty much all of those characters, you know, have had long lifetimes since then. So this is not like, you know, something brand new to kind of do this do this in comics. It has a long history for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But see, their problem is that, you know, in a title like X-Men, you still have those, you know, the guy characters who are basically, they're still the ones who are in the forefront. I mean, yes, Storm is a major X-Men character, and you could argue she is one of the main characters. She is a main character, but she's one of the leaders of the X-Men, which I agree. She is a very important integral part. You could consider probably maybe the biggest woman comic superhero in Marvel, at least. And, you know, she's definitely up there. But you can say she's just as equal to Cyclops. She's certainly lesser than Wolverine in the X-Men.
And, well, I just to note that in, you know, the kind of international character of Giant Size X-Men number one, Wolverine is Canadian. So that was kind of like that was diversity in some weird respect to have a Canadian character instead of all American characters.
That's true. For sure.
I'm just standing up for, you know,
the Canadians. 70s era. I get it. I understand. Marvel. No, but for sure, like during that era, that was big. But you know, now it's sort of like, you know, where are the Latinos and where are the African Americans and where are the women main characters who are not, you know, the side character or the, you know, someone who's able to carry their own title. And of course they exist, but the point being is that they're not pushed forward as much as those other characters like Spider-Man or Superman or Batman. I mean, just look at the movies they're choosing to make. They're deciding that they don't want to make any women they don't want to have any of the women titled characters to have their own movie franchise. I mean, out of the whole Marvel list of phases where we're going to have the Marvel Universe movies, which I think are fantastic films, there's only one movie that's named after one of the women comic book characters, and that's Captain Marvel, who we're not going to see for a number of years.
Right. And I think they are going to make a Wonder Woman movie. That's a DC character.
Yes.
But DC also has many more male characters than female characters.
Yes. Staying with the Marvel films, with the Marvel Universe films, you know, there is a character in the Marvel Universe. She's part of the Avengers. The film, the movie version of the Avengers, Black Widow, who everyone is saying, you know, why can't she have her own film? You know, Scarlett Johansson proved in another film where she plays a strong female lead that it could be a box office success. But, you know, Marvel just didn't want to create a movie where that character, Black Widow, is the lead. Which, you know, if it doesn't fit into the story, which is probably what they'll say, that's completely understandable. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, though, it's still business. And if they know that movie can make money, why not? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. No, there's no business person who is in this industry, whether it be comic books or gaming or any industry, actually, frankly, who, you know, if they see money can be made from a character like that, they wouldn't do it. And it's just baffling, actually. Like, it just doesn't make any sense why you wouldn't put forward these women characters unless they just didn't see there was an audience there for it, even though there's an audience that's begging them to do it.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you kind of run up into this kind of like two levels of misogyny, because like comic books are overwhelming, the comic book characters are overwhelmingly male, and then kind of giant Hollywood CGI extravaganza movies are, the characters are overwhelmingly male, and they're kind of pitched towards teenage boys, which comic books are pitched towards teenage boys a lot as well. So, you know, it's not like there's a lot of non-comic book related blockbuster movies which have female characters, you know, in the lead either. So it's you know, trying to get this done, which I think would be a good thing, and I hope it does happen, is kind of, you know, swimming upstream for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like you just said, though, like it's a battle, but there's proof there that these things are success. Getting back to, you know, the new Thor comic, where the person portraying Thor is a woman, the sales figures are showing that this is irrefutable data that's presented by Diamond Comics, which is one of the biggest it's basically like the only game in town nowadays. They're a major comic book distributor. They distribute their comics from Marvel and DC and many of the different comic book companies to the comic book stores. And every month they put out which are the top comics. And if you look at that data, the new Thor is in the top 10 practically every month. I mean, I think just this past month, she dropped out of the top 10 for the first time with issue 5. And she was number the top. She was in the top 11. She was the 11th top-selling comic of the month. And the only reason she wasn't in the top 10 was because one comic had their sales bundled with one of those loot crate packages, which is basically people subscribe to like a box, you know, like Birchbox or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they counted the sales there, even though that those people who subscribed to the box necessarily didn't purchase specifically that comic because it's just in that box. You know, the company did a mass order purchase and put them in the box for the individuals who subscribe. Also in the top 10, two number one issues of Marvel characters who are women. Spider-Gwen, which is a reimagination of Gwen Stacy, Spider-Man's girlfriend from the, you know, recall her from the very early days of Spider-Man.
Oh man, they brought Gwen Stacy back to life.
And it's like a reimagination, and she is Spider-Man.
Oh, interesting.
And it's really well done. And I mean, it just came out this past month, but it was like the third highest selling comic of the month. And then there was another character, Silk, that Marvel put forward. It was an issue number one. And she's a woman character. And, you know, they're showing that these diverse characters can sell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think Marvel is sexist or misogynist for not, you know, for maybe, you know, let's try this out, or not being sure that a Black Widow movie can sell on its own. I don't think that at all. I'm just saying there's an audience there that's saying to them, we're here, we want it. But what we're seeing, which I talk about in my article, is that these right-wingers are trying to make it look like they're not doing well. Mm-hmm. So they're trying. So you know, the comic book audience, which is still overwhelmingly, you know, a white male audience. And I mean, with gaming audience, it probably skews younger. And with comic book audience, it's probably all over the board, again, because of the long history of comics. So the age group is all over the place. Mm-hmm. But if you're convincing these guys who are mostly unaware of, you know, this ongoing culture wars where this political ideology is trying to convince you that, you know, this, you know, the progressives and the liberals and social justice warriors and the feminists are trying to get you, so come over to the conservative right-wing Republican side. You know, if you're unaware of that, you don't realize that these people are saying that. When someone writes a published article, you may not know about Breitbart, but you're reading it online on what seems to be a legitimate news site, and you're seeing, oh, this girl Thor is failing, and look, this girl Thor is actually an attack on the male Thor character because she replaced him. She's not an additional character. Marvel is saying, we don't want white men represented in our comic books anymore. It's funny. It's hilarious. Like, I laugh.
So it's kind of, so in your argument, it's kind of like a gateway drug towards conservatism is what these people are trying to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, create a backlash.
Absolutely.
And introduce young impressionable comic book readers.
Absolutely.
To conservatism. So I, you know, as we were discussing this, I just had a thought, you know, if the female Thor is successful, I bet eventually that will make it into the cinematic universe, because kind of the weird paradox of these movies is, like, you know, in comic books, like, the characters never really age because they need to keep the title alive. So a lot of these characters have existed for 50 or more years. And so eventually the guy who plays Thor, Chris Hemsworth or something like that, or he's going to either get tired of doing it or he's going to get too old. And then that's the perfect opportunity to introduce female Thor. Let's get an actress, and then,
absolutely,
you know, you can reboot it again. So it would make economic sense.
I mean, it just makes economic sense too, on the fact that these characters have been around for such a long time. Like, for Thor and Captain America and Spider-Man, we're talking about decades and decades and decades that, you know, even with new storylines, I mean, thinking of new storylines for some of these characters must be difficult in itself. But, you know, sometimes it just gets stale. And what they're finding is, you know, you could revive a series with you know, Thor loses his ability to, which this is the storyline for the new Thor, by the way. They didn't just suddenly turn Thor into a woman. This woman who is now going by Thor is a completely original character, which is what they're trying to say she's not, because they haven't read the comics. They're just saying she was gender swapped. And by them, I'm talking about these right wingers. I mean, Milo Yiannopoulos of Breitbart, in his article, it's clear he did not read the comic, because he's saying they just outright turned Thor, the man, into a woman who is now Thor. That's just not true. If you read the comic, the man who once went by Thor is still in the series. In the storyline, something happens, and we don't quite know what happened, what it is that happened yet, because that's the part of keeping you into reading the comic. You want to find out what happened to make Thor, the man, unworthy of wielding the hammer. Now, the hammer is what gives you the powers of Thor.
Right.
And this woman, who again is a new original character, we don't know who she is yet. Again, a major part of the story is the man Thor trying to find out who this woman is. She is able to pick up the hammer because the hammer finds her worthy of it. And she gains the powers of Thor, and she goes by the name Thor. And this is part of the storyline. The guy Thor is still in it. He's going by Odinson because he's in agreement that, wow, I'm not worthy of this anymore, but I'm trying to find out who this woman is and why she's worthy. Mm-hmm. You actually have Odin, Thor's dad in the series. He actually does a great job of playing in the comic how these reactionaries are acting, actually. He's outraged that Thor is now a woman, and he's demanding to know who this woman is.
Mm-hmm. Right, and as you note in your piece, at one point a frog has the power of Thor in the history of the long history of the Thor comic. And there's also a character who I recall, Beta Ray Bill, who's kind of like an alien horse who gets Thor's power. So this is like a longstanding thing that someone else can grab Mjolnir, or however you pronounce it, Thor's hammer, and become Thor. And you also note that in the Captain America comic, one of Captain America's kind of quasi sidekicks for a long time, the Falcon, who was actually in the last Captain America movie, played by Anthony Mackie, I think.
Yes.
He's taken over the title of Captain America. So, and what this also made me think of was, I don't know if you were reading comics back in the early 90s, but the death of Superman was a big plot line that, like, you know, made national news, and, you know, they kill off Superman, and then they brought it back with, like, these four different characters, and, like, one of them may have actually been Superman, and one of them was African-American named Steel, and they made a movie with Shaquille O'Neal called Steel that was really bad. But anyway, this is, like, so they've done this, you know, comics like mine to... the art form minds its history constantly. So this is like not a new thing, but I guess what that made me think was like, so much of what happens in comics is like, it's just like a stunt. And like, so they'll kill off Superman, and then, but of course they have to bring him back because it's like too much money to be made in selling Superman comics. So like, there's this, you know, longstanding joke in comics that like no one ever stays dead. I thought Gwen Stacy would stay dead, but I guess they're bringing her back, and maybe it's like an alternate dimension, or, you know, it's a clone, or, you know, all sorts of wacky things happen. And like, so basically they'll do something and they'll change the character, and then the character changes back. And it's just like everything, it either reboots or it's, everything's back to how it was. I mean, so do you think that's what's eventually going to happen, that like, you know, they're not going to keep the black Captain America, and they're not going to keep the female Thor? Like, they'll just reboot it again, and then they also get a new number one to sell. You know, the first issue of the reboot will sell better because the collectors buy it. So there's like another extra economic incentive for them to do this. So I guess I kind of have like a cynical view of the comics industry. And I mean, what do you think about that?
I think it's definitely a possibility. I mean, if their storyline is leading towards that, I mean, I'm sure they actually have, in terms of at least maybe not every issue written out already, but they certainly have, you know, a general, you know, beginning and end. I mean, for example, Game of Thrones, George R.R. Martin, while he didn't write the last book yet, he knows where it's going, so he's able to tell the TV producers, you know, this is how the series is going to end. So when the show goes past gets completed and my last book isn't done yet, you know, you'll at least have the general consensus of how it's supposed to end. Mm-hmm. So I do believe they know that. So, I mean, do I see some of these characters disappearing completely? Possibly, but what I actually think is that and again, this is just speculation completely right here with what I'm saying. This new Thor and, you know, this new Thor and the Captain America, they might actually become their own series. I mean, because this is basically what we're getting here. You know, it's in the comic book industry, it's incredibly hard to start a new franchise. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at it, it's been the same main players all the time: Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, X-Men, mm-hmm. the Avengers. Because that's what sells. That's what comic book fans like. That's what they know. And it's hard to get them to try something different. I mean, are there titles that come along and do that? Sure. But generally, I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah. So, yeah. These characters have incredible staying power. I mean, some of them were invented in the late 30s.
Yes.
And, you know, people are, and they're still coming up with new stories, and people are still interested in these characters.
So when you interject someone like this new Thor, who is a woman, and you're saying she's a new original character, She gains the title of Thor because she becomes worthy of wielding the hammer. And then they see it sells good. It's doing well. You know, when it comes time for the story maybe to give that hammer back to Thor, they're likely going to unveil who this woman is. And she'll already be a known popular character. Mm-hmm. They might give her her own series. I mean, that's what I think could happen. I mean, with what's happening right now, actually, with Marvel, is that they've actually just announced a new title that's coming out in a few months called The New Avengers. And it has a longer name, actually. It's like the all-new, all-different Avengers.
Right, because I thought there already was a New Avengers.
Yeah, but they're having like an all-new, all-different Avengers, I think.
Even more new.
And it's actually a fully diverse cast, and they're slowly unveiling who is in this New Avengers. And they've already announced the new Thor, the woman, and Miss Marvel, who is the new Muslim teen girl who's portraying Miss Marvel. So, I mean, these characters, maybe they are here to stay. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I don't know how long, but either they're here to stay in those titles or they're getting their own series. I mean, I think it's different this time. I really do. There's a much more diverse audience now that's reading these comics. I mean, Miss Marvel, the Muslim teen girl, she's actually, her series is actually the number one bestseller through digital sales during many months. This is including, you know, digital sales for X-Men and Spider-Man. It sort of shows, actually, you know, there's an audience who doesn't feel comfortable going to the comic book store and buying these comics. And, you know, they feel more comfortable just going to a website in the privacy of their own home or taking out their phone. And, I mean, look at how look how women are treated when they play online games. You know, it becomes quite clear how, very clear that they're treated differently. So, you know, maybe they don't feel comfortable going to these stores where they know, you know, this crowd is. I mean, again, I think it's not the exact same with the two different communities, but it's definitely there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting. I just want to bring up one more thing related to this. I mean, I don't agree with the kind of the backlash people, but in some ways I can kind of at least see their perspective or understand, you know, what they're feeling. And, you know, it reminds me of this meme that went around when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie came out a year or two ago, and it's like, you know, so it's like Michael Bay raped my childhood. Yes. That's like the memes. That's like an offensive thing to say.
No, I understand,
you know,
what you're saying.
Equating
exactly how they phrase it.
Right, with sexual violence. But, you know, so people honestly feel like, you know, if these beloved characters that they grew up with are changed in some way, and I didn't see the rebooted Ninja Turtles movie, but it was like they were like aliens instead of mutants, you know, mutant is in the title. So this kind of stuff, if they feel, take it as like an identity attack and like, you know, this thing that from their childhood. So it's like wrapped up in all these like sentimental feelings. And if they read comics as a kid, maybe they were kind of like a nerd or a loser. And, you know, comics was one way they like felt a sense of community or something they were really into as a kid. And then they see it being changed, either for like weird economic reasons or to make it because new writers come in and want to make the characters more diverse or change them. Like, I can kind of understand like where this comes from, especially for people who are still maybe kind of young and, you know, feel insecure in their identity. So I'm not defending the kind of misogyny and all that stuff, but, you know, I just kind of can see where this comes from.
You know, let me just approach, you said two things there. Let me just talk about the comic book angle of it first, and then I'll talk about the childhood thing specifically, because that's something I love. That's just unbelievably ridiculous. But with the comic book angle, you know, they do see it like that. But the ridiculous thing is that in seeing it like that, they're viewing this white male superhero as the default. You know, they're claiming that if you turn her into a woman, or you turn her into a black man, or you turn her into a Latino woman or a Muslim teenager girl, and by doing that, you're pandering to a certain audience. And that in itself is just unbelievably outrageous, because they really do believe that, you know, that's pandering. That's different. That's not what it's supposed to be. The default is that white man. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe that was the case back then, but it's clearly not the case now. And it really is you know, just wrong to think that way nowadays. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the childhood thing, that thing is, that's ridiculous. I'm saying ridiculous because it's all ridiculous, but mm-hmm. you know, the childhood thing is baffling to me because no one is changing the comics that shaped your childhood.
Right,
you know, the Ghostbusters movie, the reboot they're doing, where
that's a perfect example of this. Kind
where they're turning into an all female cast. You know, no one's going back in time and splicing out the old Ghostbusters and taking out Bill Murray and putting in Kristen Wiig. You know, that movie is still there. You can pop it into your DVD player, or you can buy it off iTunes, or you can torrent it if you would like. You can do that and still watch it and relive your childhood. That's not going anywhere. But it's also incredibly selfish, because what you're saying is that childhood memory, that thing that is long gone, you can't do something new or change any of that for the children who are growing up today, the mm-hmm. young women, the young Muslim teens, you know, to say, take Miss Marvel, for example. You can't say, you know, to the young black kids or the Latino kids growing up, you know, you're saying to them, you know, don't ruin my childhood, which is long gone, for your childhood, which is right now. Mm-hmm. You know, these things can shape someone, you know, like it shaped them. You know, if you're a young woman and you're seeing a character on screen that represents you, another woman, you know, again, Miss Marvel to me is a great example. A Muslim teen girl is a superhero in the Marvel Universe. She has her own title, and it's the number one digital seller. I mean, if that's not saying there's a whole audience that's saying, you know, this represents me, this will become, you know, something important to me, this is what I'm going to look back on and say my childhood, then, like, you're just not paying attention. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, that it's incredibly selfish, and it's just one of those reactionary responses.
Yeah, it does kind of come from a conservative place, you know, it's like nostalgia.
Tradition.
Yeah, sentimentalism and, you know, keeping things pure. And you can kind of see how this bleeds into conservative ideology. And I think that, you know, that's the perfect response, that, you know, the new thing, the reboot, doesn't erase, you know, we're not going through and, like, throwing out all the old versions. The original Ghostbusters is still there. You know, I'm sure the new Ghostbusters is probably going to be very good because the cast and the director are very good, but... you know, the original is still there, and no one is, you know, prying it out of your cold, dead hands or anything like that.
Yeah.
Do you have time to talk about the other subject we entertained?
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay, so as you mentioned, you have a Tumblr. Is it called Public Shaming?
Yeah, it's the Public Shaming. Yeah, Public Shaming. It's on Tumblr.
Right. So we'll link to that. And, you know, public shaming is in the, well, it's kind of always a low level in the news because it's happening a lot more with social media. And then the author John Ronson has a new book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. Mm-hmm. And there was an excerpt in the New York Times Magazine a month or two ago. And I guess it's maybe just coming out right now. So I read the excerpt. I haven't read the book. But he kind of profiles people who have been publicly shamed, are kind of virally shamed. And it's these people like Justine Sacco, this woman who sent an offensive tweet and ended up losing her job. And there was another woman who like posed at Arlington Cemetery, like with her giving the middle finger to the camera. And like, she lost her job, you know, like working with developmentally disabled adults or something, like something crazy like that. So this is like a growing thing, but there's also like a backlash represented by Ronson. And I guess Monica Lewinsky had a TED talk, which I haven't mm-hmm. seen, but people are mentioning in this same breath of kind of, you know, she was maybe the original version of this. Like, she never, you know, really got to speak out and, you know, was her character was dragged through the mud. So as someone who does public shaming to some respect, you know, what do you think about this kind of backlash?
Oh, I mean, public shaming is basically a tool, and it could be used for good or for bad. For example, what I do on my blog, let's take Monica Lewinsky, for example, I wouldn't be shaming Monica Lewinsky. She's a completely innocent victim in all of this. My blog turns the tables and points that attention on the people who are shaming Monica Lewinsky, the ones who are saying terribly sexist, offensive, misogynistic things to her. And it turns the tables and points at them. And in that sense, it's not really bullying when you're doing it to the bullies.
Well, okay, but who, you know, who bullies the bullies? I mean, who chooses who is the bully? And that's kind of a weird thing about this Gamergate thing. You know, the Gamergate people feel like they're the victims, and yet a lot of them are misogynists and are attacking people, and some are giving, you know, death threats. But everyone, you know, everyone in America, you know, likes to think that they are the victim. But I guess, I mean, the thing that, you know, I was wondering is, like, so you're on your site, you're, you know, finding tweets from basically regular people. You know, these aren't like media figures. You know, it's people who just have Twitter accounts and are tweeting to their friends or whatever. And, you know, you're showing things that they're saying that are hypocritical. I mean, so you don't see kind of like a civilian professional like split here. Like, you think it's kind of all fair game?
Oh, no, there's definitely a difference. Like, for example, I would never go after, I mean, if I saw a civilian say something terribly offensive online, I would post it in the blog, but I wouldn't, you know, make a big, you know, I wouldn't go after their job and post their information. First of all, on the blog, I don't do that at all. What I simply do is quote exactly what they make public.
Mm-hmm.
I do not post any additional information. For example, if they post something terrible on Twitter, I take a screen cap of exactly what they said verbatim and attached with the username they chose to connect it to. And that's what I post. Mm-hmm. If they don't use their real name on Twitter, I don't go out to find their real name. If, you know, I don't post their, go looking for their address or their place of work. You know, when it comes to a civilian, it's simply to point out, you know, there are real people saying these things. They're not, and they don't even think it's that bad to say because they're not even hiding by an anonymous, you know, avatar or username.
Mm-hmm.
So when I use it for a civilian, I use it to point out the hypocrisy and to show just how maybe widespread a certain thing is.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes
right.
to...
Sorry, one you did that I thought was interesting was about, which has just been in the news recently, which is about Bowie Bergdahl, if that's how you say his name.
Bo Bergdahl.
Right, so you pointed out, how do you find these things? That's another question. people who were yelling at Obama saying, you know, bring Bergdahl home, like, we need him home. And then, you know, obviously this deal happened where some Taliban prisoners from Guantanamo were traded. And then these same people were yelling at Obama saying, you know, betrayer, like, how dare you releasing Taliban? Yeah. So first of all, like, how did you find these individual instances?
I'm just really good at searching online. I could pretty much find anything.
But, okay.
really, though, you just find something that someone says. You find the outrageous thing, you know, the thing that, like, wow, that's racist or sexist or just a terrible thing to say. And then you could find, you know, searching through their online history, usually it's Twitter because it's so easy to search through Twitter. Twitter makes it really easy to search through Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You can search their Twitter history and find, you know, something they're saying that completely goes against how they previously felt or explains what they experienced to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Bo Bergdahl thing, what I was trying to point out there is, you know, if you wanted Bo Bergdahl to come home and you wanted 100% support for him, and then you found out these allegations that he deserted and they want to there's going to be a trial to see if he should go to a jail or not, and if these, you know, if these accusations are true, that's one thing. If, you know, you find this new information and like, okay, you know, they brought him home, he's home now, let him face any, if he's found guilty of these crimes he's charged with, he should face some sort of punishment. I mean, there can be debate on what the punishment should be. I mean, me personally, I think a guy who spent 5 years captive with the Taliban shouldn't really be spending any more time captive in jail. I mean, again, that's something that could be debated about. But what I had a problem with were these conservatives who were attacking Obama for not bringing home this true patriot American, you know, saying you got to bring him home, only a fascist dictator, Muslim, socialist, Marxist, like Obama wouldn't care about a true American hero. And then you find out these allegations and you don't say, you know, bring Bergdahl home. We'll let the American justice system, something we should be, you know, proud to show the world. You know, we don't let that take hold. We say, which is what these conservatives say, you should have never brought him home. You should have let the Taliban kill him, or you want the military to execute him, firing squad. You know, that to me is ridiculous and hypocritical, and that's the type of thing I'll point out. So I'll take that Obama's a fascist dictator, socialist, Marxist, who hates the American troops, and then I'll place it with, you know, execute Bo Bergdahl in the most horrific, terrible, ISIS-like way possible.
Right. So just so to be clear, you're finding these are the same people. We'll say said the first thing, you know, to bring back Bergdahl, then you find the same person later on is saying, like, how dare Obama, you know, bring back Bergdahl. Yeah, so that's an absurdity.
And I mean, with that argument of like, you know, it's all about, you know, moral ambiguity and who's right and who's wrong. I'm sorry, but there is one side that's clearly right. You know, that's the side that's saying, no, don't be sexist or racist. And, you know, that's not what society is saying is okay. You know, as a broad society, the general consensus, I mean, I truly believe, I think most people would believe too, is that sexism and racism and wanting to see someone executed on television is a bad thing. And then on the other side, you have these people who are misogynists and racists and want to see this guy killed. I mean, that's bad. I mean, I don't see where there's sort of this gray area. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, to go back to the beginning of this conversation, there's 97% of scientists who say global warming is happening. Like, that's not something that you can be like, you know, there's two sides to every story. I mean, no, there's not.
Well, I'm sure some people in our comments would happen to disagree with you, but we will not get into the facts of global warming in this conversation. I guess I'm of two minds. So, I mean, if someone says something horrible online, like unless it's a teenager or something, you know, they have to realize that, you know, you say it online, anyone can find it. You know, that's the world we're living in. You know, at the same time, the Ronson profile, you know, show that, you know, we shouldn't like judge someone's human worth based on one tweet. And, you know, there's this absurd kind of mob mentality that takes over sometimes. And like, you know, people say something stupid or take an offensive photo or something, and then they lose their job or they get kicked out of school or something. You know, there's this case that's obviously very, very offensive of, you know, the frat boys in Oklahoma, and, you know, they were expelled, but I think there's a pretty good case that it was unconstitutional for the public university to, you know, expel people for singing a racist chant. So, I mean, just kind of like, I don't know, the mob mentality of it does trouble me.
Well, I mean, I could see, I definitely agree. I'm not fine with, you know, just what, like, for example, Justine Sacco, with that specific thing, when that was happening, I was actually making fun of, you know, in a mocking way on Twitter, like I usually do, trying to, like, I'm usually sarcastic about it. You know, I was pointing out how when you search Justin on Twitter, the autocorrect when that was all happening was Justine Sacco and not Justin Bieber, which it usually was. Like, that's how large it got. And I was sort of pointing out, you know, like, there was an outrage there that, you know, clearly she said something that was meant to be a joke that failed at doing that. And was it inappropriate and offensive? Many can argue yes. I believe, you know, if the joke was properly pulled off, she could have certainly made it a successful tweet. But yes, some people were offended by it, and that's just how it goes. I mean, I personally don't think she should have lost her job over it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there are consequences to the things you do. Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything about the Justine Sacco tweet. I didn't post it up on public shaming because, again, like I said, my view is different than what I guess you would call the mob mentality during that time. But yeah, it's a tool. The use of public shaming is a tool, and it can be used for good. It can be used for bad. I mean, with those frat kids, I don't care if they were expelled. I mean, if I was their teacher, would I expel them? I don't know. Do I know more about them? Maybe if I'd find out that this isn't in their usual character, and I knowing them, I would feel differently. As someone who doesn't know about them, they said something, there's consequences, they're expelled. It doesn't bother me one way or another. But but there are consequences to your action. And if a university rules that their rules were broken by you doing that, they have every right to say, you can't come here.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think we're kind of like in a transitional period in how we treat this stuff. I mean, so the other story that Ronson talks about is this weird thing with the joke about a dongle, and I won't go into that whole thing. But in that case, like both the person who made the possibly offensive joke and the person who highlighted the possibly offensive joke, they both lost their jobs. So that was a lose-lose situation. But it kind of seems like, you know, because of technology, you know, anything you say anywhere, you know, could go viral. And, you know, people say offensive things, and should their life be ruined if they say one offensive thing? You know, everyone says something offensive. Maybe it's an email. You know, maybe it's in your personal email. Maybe it's just a text you sent to someone. And so anything, if someone screen caps that text and then it goes viral, and then you lose your job when you're just made, you know, you made an offensive joke or something like that. So that's frightening. So it seems like at some point there's going to have to be some kind of change where, I don't know, the mob mentality or the idea that like this person should just get fired or kicked out or expelled from the community. Like, it seems like that's going to have to change because the possibility of anything blowing up, you know, like grows and grows as video technology and so forth kind of progress.
Well, I mean, I've said things that some may deem to be offensive on Twitter. You know, when I'm making jokes or mocking people, some might find some of the things I say to be offensive. And sometimes they are offensive. And I realize this maybe after I've said them. And, you know, me being called out is one of the consequences. Mm-hmm. I work somewhere where I'm able to discuss these things. I mean, I work for a progressive political show. So, I mean, most of what I say, if not all what I say, is within the same, you know, things we talk about on the show. So right. I'm one of those lucky people who can do this. But, I mean, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of different, you know, things that come into play. Private, you know, what you say in your email and posted on, and then it gets, if your private email gets posted online. Yeah, it's unfortunate that happens. But, I mean, there's a lot of people saying really terrible things publicly who find nothing wrong with that. I mean, they're putting it forth into the public. They're not trying to hide it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're called out on that, I mean, you were basically putting it out there to be called out on. I mean, you wanted people to read it. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether you expected that reaction or not, that's one thing, but you clearly put it out there to get a reaction.
Right, right. And the thing that's changed is that, you know, 20 years ago, if you had a joke and you told it to five people, no one else was ever going to hear it. And now if you have 20 Twitter followers and you tell a joke, it's possible that a million people could see it through a strange, you know, course of events, as happened with Justine Sacco. So,
well, it's also sort of like the thing we were talking about with, you know, Gamergate and the comic books and how reactionaries are acting. You know, no one's taking those things away. You could still make that offensive joke to your five friends you're hanging out with at the bar. I mean, that's
right. Let's say one of your friends doesn't like you very much, and they're recording your offensive joke, and then they send it to your boss the next day. I mean, so these things, you know, these things could happen.
Well, I mean, it's always been there. Someone could always have. But I mean, yeah, these technologies are just making it easier to capture these things. But mm-hmm. I mean, no one's taking away your ability to do them.
Right.
I mean,
right. But the potential costs have gone up. I mean, the potential rewards. I mean, what's the reward of telling a funny joke on Twitter? Like, you get some, like, people favorite it and retweet it, so you feel a little bit good about yourself. But the potential downside is you lose your job. I don't know. So, I mean, people are certainly, what happened to Justine Sacco probably made people more circumspect about making potentially offensive jokes on Twitter.
Well, I mean, if you could still make jokes. I mean, there's certain jokes though that are clearly gonna, you know, seem like, you know, maybe I should stop and not press send on this one.
Right.
Like, you know, maybe I shouldn't send the N-word out online. Maybe I shouldn't right. call this woman a slut publicly on Twitter. I mean, there's still things that, like, you know, if you went out, you know, in public with your friends and you used the N-word or you called a woman a slut, you know, you might still get looks that are like, that was inappropriate and offensive. I mean, there's mm-hmm. still, there's definitely certain things that, you know, it's the same in both areas.
Right. I mean, but the thing is with the Sacco joke is that it was obviously she wasn't like a racist person who was saying, you know, that I can't get AIDS because I'm white. It was making fun of that perspective. And then that was lost in the translation, and it was, you know, kind of poorly worded. So, you know, this is like not clear cut in a lot of ways. Did you, by any chance, hear the This American Life where they interviewed? It was about trolls, and they found this person who was trolling a specific writer, Lindy West.
Yes,
that was really fascinating. We'll link to that. It kind of talked about the psychology of the people who were doing this, and that kind of relates to the whole misogyny aspect of the Gamergate phenomenon. I think we've about reached the end of our time.
Okay.
Where can people find your stuff online? We will link to it.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/Matt Binder. Or if you already know Twitter and you're using like an app or something, just @Matt Binder. I'm a producer and contributor. You could regularly hear me on the Majority Report. And sometimes when host Sam Cedar is out, myself and my co-producer, Michael Brooks, we co-host the show. So you can hear us there at majority.fm. And that's where most of my stuff is. If I ever post an article, get something published somewhere, it'll be tweeted out on the Twitter account. So that's the best place to find me.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for coming on Culturally Determined, and thanks to our viewers, and we'll see you again next time.
Thanks for having me.